It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delfiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News Team. Now, here's what's happening.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the broadcast. I'm Bill Price. Coronavirus concern.
I think there is a very high risk that this virus could become a pandemic.
That is our top story at noon. Two planes carrying American passengers from a quarantine cruise ship in Japan landed in the U.S. earlier today. 14 have tested positive for coronavirus.
We're exhausted, but we're on the plane, and that's a good feeling. Pretty miserable wearing these masks.
Cheryl Molesky from Syracuse, New York, among those on board. So too was Bill Smedley. He's from Dillsburg, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, noon is unnerving a little bit, but we're ready to get out of here, and, you know, I want to get back home.
One plane landed in Northern California overnight, the other in San Antonio, Texas.
All of the passengers will begin a new 14-day quarantine period now that they're back in the U.S.
That's correspondent Cammie McCormick. So why were those passengers allowed to return to the States? Here's infectious disease expert Dr. Peter Hotez.
There's no good decision to make. You had to make the best decision possible, and I think so far if you look at what CDC and Health and Human Services has been doing, they've been making good decisions so far.
The number of coronavirus cases worldwide has now topped 71,000, the death toll approaching 1,800. The massive flooding in parts of the southeast is not over yet. In Jackson, Mississippi, the Pearl River expected to crest later today.
This is a precarious situation that could turn at any moment.
Hundreds of homes have already been damaged by the flood waters, including this guy's house.
It's been kind of a struggle that I can't get my flooding insurance to cover it.
At least 300 homes have been damaged by the raging flood waters, a state of emergency up today in Mississippi. The Democratic presidential race shifts to Nevada ahead of Saturday's caucuses. The latest polls show Bernie Sanders in the lead. All of the candidates now shifting their focus to the new competitor in the race, former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
I think he cannot hide behind the airwaves and the money. I think he has to come on the shows, and I personally think he should be on the debate stage.
Minnesota Senator and White House hopeful Amy Klobuchar, Bloomberg's campaign, says they're hopeful the billionaire will be on that debate stage Wednesday in Nevada.
Michael Bloomberg's not on the ballot in Nevada, but he's been rising in the polls anyway after spending more than $400 million on ads and organizations.
That's Deborah Rodriguez reporting. Over 1,000 former employees of the Justice Department now calling for Attorney General Bill Barr to step down over his handling of the Roger Stone case. Barr intervened in the sentencing for the Trump associate and reduced his recommended sentence for lying to Congress in the Russia probe. Here's conservative radio talk show host Dan Bongino.
You had an obvious, egregious sentence. Come on. 9 years for Roger Stone. You don't have to like Roger Stone, but nine years for someone with no criminal history. You want this guy to die in prison?
The judge set to sentence Roger Stone sometime this week. Virginia Governor Ralph Northam's push to ban the sale of assault weapons has failed after members of his own party defected. Moderate Democrats joining Republicans on a Senate committee. Rejecting a bill that would have prohibited the sale of those guns and banned certain forms of ammunition. General Motors pulling out of Australia, New Zealand, and Thailand. GM's Julian Blissett says the company's been disappointed in the financial numbers in those places.
Regrettably, despite the tireless work of many good people, the business case could not meet GM's investment threshold.
Blissett says GM's move out of that region will allow the company to ramp up its investments in electric and autonomous vehicles. At the Daytona 500 yesterday.
Gentlemen, start your engines.
President Trump helped kick off the big race that'll take place later today because of a rainstorm on Sunday. Mr. Trump arrived at the Daytona 500 aboard Air Force One that flew right over the crowd. The president then took his limo for a lap right before the Daytona 500. In Chicago yesterday, basketball's best gathered for an all-star game. They were also there to remember the late Kobe Bryant.
We'll never see another basketball player quite like Kobe.
Lakers star Magic Johnson kicked off the night of all-star tributes for Bryant, led by some of Chicago's biggest names.
We won't say goodbye.
And that's the fight. So even in the darkest times, you'll feel Kobe's light.
Ain't no one wiser, ain't no one better than
Kawhi Leonard won the MVP award, which was named in honor of Kobe Bryant. Major League Baseball Commissioner Rob Manfred says he will not tolerate beanball retaliation against members of the 2017 Houston Astros. Some players have made threats in the wake of the sign-stealing scandal that's led for calls for their World Series title to be stripped. Manfred admits he thought about doing that. In the end, though, it just wasn't possible.
It had never happened in baseball. Whether or not you put an asterisk or ask for the trophy back, I don't think it makes that much difference.
Some members of the Los Angeles Dodgers who lost to the Astros in the World Series in 2017 are calling for the title to be stripped. Still to come this Monday, new call center in Henrietta, new speed beacons in Buffalo, and a new way to teach kids in Pennsylvania.
Good afternoon. We're tracking a disturbance that'll bring some snow, sleet, and rain later tonight into tomorrow. I'll be back with forecast details coming up shortly.
Thank you, Kevin. Checking the stories, making news where you live in New York and Pennsylvania Monday, February 17th. New York State now making $15 million in additional funding available to help low-income residents keep warm this winter. Starting tomorrow, households who aren't able to pay their utility bills can apply for a second round of HEAP funds. This winter, over 1 million New York households have received regular benefits through the Home Energy Assistance Program. They're prepping for a presidential primary in Pennsylvania. Family Life's Brandon Dixon.
The first Democratic presidential candidates are filing voter signatures to get on PA's primary ballot. The first to file was California billionaire Tom Steyer, submitting signatures Thursday. On Friday, Mayor Pete, Amy Klobuchar, Elizabeth Warren, and Mike Bloomberg also filed. The other campaigns have through 5 p.m. tomorrow to file 2,000 signatures of voters who are registered Democrats to get on the Keystone State's April 28th primary ballot. Brandon Dixon, Family Life News.
The mobile merger between T-Mobile and Sprint last week could result in a new call center in Henrietta, New York, near Rochester. Town Supervisor Steve Schultz says more than 1,000 jobs could be created.
Obviously, it helps the local economy, helps the wages of the people around, because the more job competition, that's what helps push up wages.
Schultz says that new call center could be up and running as soon as this fall.
Site prep has largely been done, so I would expect that they would get shovels in the ground this spring. Whether that means whether they could move fast enough to be open this fall or whether it'd be a year from now, that's not an unreasonable pace.
Yesterday, State Attorney General Tish James announced that New York would not appeal last week's court ruling that paved the way for that mobile merger. T-Mobile's takeover of Sprint, valued at over $26 billion. Speed zone beacons going up outside of a couple of schools in Buffalo. City officials hope they help deter motorists from speeding through school zones.
They're going in, and we think they're going to be very effective. They're going to be blinking amber lights, which everybody knows is more or less the universal symbol for caution, slow down.
Buffalo Parking Commissioner Kevin Helfer says motorists caught speeding through a school zone face a $50 fine.
These are violations. They're going to be treated as a parking ticket, not a police V&T ticket. It does not and will not go on their license, as opposed to if you get pulled over by a police officer.
The mayor of Buffalo says some 10,000 motorists speed through school zones every single day in the Queen City. More than 2,000 Pennsylvania schools could have a cancer-causing material in the walls, ceilings, and floors of those buildings. Officials say with limited money, too, for renovations and hardly any state or federal oversight, asbestos remains a hidden danger. Some in Pennsylvania have called the problem a humanitarian crisis. Last month, Governor Wolf proposed $1 billion in state monies to help remove asbestos and lead from Keystone State schools. The head of the Pennsylvania State System of Higher Education wants to change how the 14 state-owned universities operate in the Commonwealth. Here's Family Life's Terry Diener.
Facing declining enrollment and financial headwinds, System Chancellor Dan Greenstein has been talking for 18 months about the need for the universities to act more like a system if they're all going to survive. In a recent two-day retreat, the university presidents each presented their individual institutions' plans for stabilizing or improving their finances in 5 years. Terry Diener, Family Life News.
Governor Cuomo taking the wraps off a plan he hopes will boost winter tourism in the Empire State. A free snowmobiling weekend will take place March 14th and the 15th. Out-of-state and Canadian visitors with registered and insured snowmobiles will be able to travel the entire snowmobile trail system in New York for free. Typically, tourists have to fork over $100 to register their snowmobiles. Thousands of guests flocking to the Twin Tiers this past weekend. It was the 8th annual Outdoor Expo in Horseheads, New York.
Over 7,000 people at last count have come through the doors. The parking lot was so full here, they said it was bigger than Black Friday at the old Kmart. So we're real happy about it.
Organizer Bill Christian says over 100 different vendors on hand selling everything from fishing tackle gear to hunting wear to large RVs. Well, the stars were out in Chicago last night. Sunny time, your two-minute drill.
Yeah, we start with that revamped NBA All-Star Game. They altered the format this year to ensure the contest would end on a made shot. And it was Anthony Davis from the free throw line.
Oh, Team LeBron has hit it.
Team LeBron rallied for a 157-155 win against Team Giannis. Kawhi Leonard led all players with 30 points, 8 three-pointers, named the Kobe Bryant MVP. More basketball news. Cleveland Cavaliers and John Beilein have discussed the possibility of the coach stepping down within the next 24 hours. Beilein, from Burton, New York, started his basketball career here in the Family Life listening area at Erie Community College, Nazareth, Lemoyne, Canisius, before moving on to West Virginia, Michigan, and the Cavaliers. As we get more, we'll pass it on to you. Daytona 500 postponed until this afternoon following a second rain delay. Denny Hamlin looking to become the first back-to-back winner of the Great American Race since Sterling Marlin from 94 and 95, just the sixth driver to win the Daytona 500 at least three times. Not in my house, says Sabres captain Jack Eichel after the Leafs fans were chanting Go Leafs Go. Sabres rallied with three goals in a 91-second span to win 5-2 against Toronto. McKenzie Blackwood rejected 52 shots. New Jersey won a seven-round shootout, 4-3 win against the Blue Jackets in Newark at Madison Square Garden. Bruins beat the Rangers 3-1. In Pittsburgh, Penguins looking good with a 5-1 win against the Red Wings. XFL action. DC Defenders improved to 2-0, crushing the New York Guardians 27-0. Guardians 1-1. Seattle Dragons moved to 1-1 with their 17-9 win against the winless Tampa Bay Vipers. Former Steeler backup Landry Jones led the Dallas Renegades to a 25-18 win against the winless Los Angeles Wildcats, and the Houston Roughnecks moved to 2-0 with a 28-24 win against the 1-1 St. Louis Battlehawks. For Family Life, I'm Sonny Dolphiet.
Thank you, Sonny. Still to come on this Monday edition of the Noon Report, coronavirus concerns will have the very latest. Plus, locust armies literally eating away farms in Kenya. We'll have more on that. And at the end of today's broadcast, some fascinating facts about our presidents on this President's Day.
There's a dangerous, often assumed thought that what our kids do online is none of our business. Don't buy it. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. The stats are sobering. According to the American Psychological Association, the average age of a child's first exposure to pornography, 13 years old. Many see it as young as 5. According to another survey, 42% of children have been more than a third actively threatened online, and one in five 12-year-olds has been contacted by a predator. Other pitfalls of unsupervised and unlimited screen time might not be quite as awful as all that, but it's still worth knowing about. One doctor, writing at Psychology Today in 2015, described how overuse of technology leaves kids, quote, moody, crazy, and lazy. Phones and tablets overstimulate young nervous systems, resulting in disrupted sleep, fried reward circuits in the brain, multiplied stress, stress and fractured attention spans. The younger the child, the worse the damage seems to get. All of this is why so many of the top executives and engineers in Silicon Valley refuse to give their own kids the mobile devices they make. In 2018, the New York Times ran a feature describing these parents at Facebook, Apple, Microsoft, Mozilla, and other tech giants who raise their own children tech-free. One Facebook veteran ominously told the Times, "I'm convinced the devil lives in our phones and is wreaking havoc on our children." Are we taking their alarm, the one being sounded by these executives, seriously enough? Christopher Knoll at Wired Magazine thinks we're not. In a recent piece, he describes the ethical debate some parents think they must have over whether they should respect their children's privacy online. He quotes an author who makes the argument that supervising our kids' tech use signals a lack of trust and then only conditions them to accept totalitarian surveillance. Now, I'll tell you how ridiculous I think that is, but Noel has already spared me that effort. He insists children should have no expectation of privacy when it comes to their online activity. The rules and boundaries he set in his home are based on a simple fact. The devices our children use belong to us, not them. Accordingly, we're entitled to see everything they see. In an age of predators, pornography, and cyberbullying, to think otherwise, well, that's not only foolish, it's actually unloving. Brett Kunkel and I make these same points in our book, A Practical Guide to Culture. For starters, kids and teens shouldn't be using devices unsupervised. Computers, tablets, and phones should only be available for use in high traffic areas of the home. No locked doors. Second, there should be no way for our kids to keep secrets from us. Know their passwords. Remind them often of your ability to check their online activity at any time. MIT psychologist and tech expert Sherry Turkle also suggests the idea of tech-free zones in the family. Specifically, she suggests the car, the dinner table, bedrooms, and vacations be designated times and places without phones or tablets. This gives kids a chance to reset, to engage in other activities, and to practice social skills not mediated by text message. In our home, we've also found that a weekly Sabbath break from our devices better prepares us for the week ahead. But most importantly, none of this works without strong, positive relationships with our children. Unless we say yes to them as valuable people in our lives and not just no to unbridled tech times for them, they're not going to understand why we're making the decisions that seem so abnormal in our culture. Just as they must answer to us for what they do online, we answer to God who entrusted them to us. Come to Breakpoint.org. I'll link you to Noel's article and also tell you how to get a copy of A Practical Guide to Culture. For Breakpoint, I'm John Stone Street.
We are coming up on 20 minutes past the hour this Monday afternoon. Let's head outside. Here's meteorologist Kevin Williams.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. A disturbance coming east out of the Midwest will bring our region snow, sleet, and rain later tonight into tomorrow. It's mainly a nuisance system, but do not be surprised across the Twin Tiers region of a 2 or 3 or 4 inch snowfall occurs overnight tonight into tomorrow morning. But in the meantime, for this afternoon, we'll have clouds and mixed sunshine with high temperatures in the upper 20s to the upper 30s. Cloudy tonight, snow and sleet will arrive, then change to rain late tonight and tomorrow. And again, there could be 2, 3, 4 inches of snow accumulating over the higher elevations of the Twin Tiers. Temperatures tonight rise from the 20s into the 40s with stiff breezes. Tomorrow, we're over to rain and showers. Then chillier again on Wednesday with flurries, sunny breaks, and a bit of lake snow off Lake Ontario. High temperatures Wednesday in the upper 20s to the middle 30s.
Okay, Kevin Williams, appreciate it. If you're just joining us, folks, here are some of the stories we're following for you today, Monday, February 17th. 14 people have the coronavirus after being evacuated from a cruise ship in Japan and flown back to the U.S. overnight. Two planes carrying those American passengers landed earlier today, one in California, the other in Texas. Reporter Erica Zuko is in San Antonio.
They were isolated during the flights. They were continued to be isolated, and they will continue to do so here as well. Anyone that shows symptoms along with those passengers will be brought to medical professionals throughout the area.
The infectious disease expert Dr. Peter Hotez at Baylor University.
I think there is a very high risk that this virus could become a pandemic.
The number of coronavirus cases worldwide has now topped 71,000. The death toll approaching 1,800. Some cab and rideshare drivers in New York City now refusing to pick up Chinese passengers over fears of coronavirus. More on that from reporter Scott Pringle.
Well, some drivers are telling the New York Post they're avoiding neighborhoods with large Chinese populations. One Uber driver saying, if I drop someone off in Flushing, I deactivate the app and then drive to another area. Well, Mayor de Blasio tweeted this is outrageous and says there will be consequences for anyone taking part in racial profiling. The coronavirus originated in China and is spread worldwide, but there are no cases in New York State.
That's Scott Pringle reporting from the Big Apple today. They're bracing for more flooding in Mississippi, where spillover from the Pearl River has already damaged hundreds of homes there. Forecaster Jacob Lanier is watching the river's rise.
Right now we're at 36.7. We're still forecasting 37.5. So that's about another 8 inches or so that the river's expected to rise over the course of the day.
State of emergency up in Mississippi today. Correspondent Omar Villafranca is in Jackson, Mississippi.
This water is expected to rise another 7 inches, and hundreds of homes and businesses are bracing for the worst. Now, the Pearl River is expected to crest later on today, but it could be until the end of the week before any of this water starts to recede.
Over 300 homes have been damaged from the flood waters in Mississippi and in Tennessee. Attorney General Bill Barr's handling of the Roger Stone case is leading to calls for his resignation. Those calls are being joined by over 1,100 former Justice Department employees. The former workers say in an open letter to Barr that he and President Trump have, quote, openly and repeatedly flouted the rule of law. As Democrats cast early ballots in Saturday's Nevada caucuses, former Mayor Michael Bloomberg is under fire for his past support of the controversial Stop and Frisk program in New York City. Here's correspondent Major Garrett.
It's worth noting, after Vice President Joe Biden, Bloomberg has garnered more congressional black support than any other candidate in the race. Bloomberg has until midnight tomorrow to qualify for Wednesday night's debate in Las Vegas. His campaign says it is hopeful he will make it on that debate stage.
That's Major Garrett reporting. Locust armies are devouring entire farms in Kenya in as little as 30 seconds. The United Nations warns these insect infestations could get 500 million times larger by this summer. The locusts travel in swarms up to 40 miles wide. Seven East African countries are in the middle of a crisis that sounds like something out of the Book of Exodus. The plague of locusts is threatening the food supply of tens of millions of people. And preparations are underway in Alaska for the 48th annual Iditarod sled dog race. Here's reporter John Jeffries.
In just 2 weeks, mushers and a team of 14 dogs will race through nearly 1,000 miles of Alaska over the course of several days. Iditarod racer Mark Nordman says volunteers make the race possible.
As far as their importance to the race, we wouldn't have an event without them. It's people in South Central. It's people that come in from the lower 48 all over the world. And, of course, our biggest volunteers are out in the villages. They make it all happen.
More than 50 mushers or sled operators enter the race each year, and they are required to participate in three smaller races in order to qualify for the Iditarod. The race is set to start in downtown Anchorage on March 7th.
That's John Jeffries reporting, and we are coming up on 25 minutes past the hour on Monday afternoon. You're plugged into the Noon Report on Family Life.
And welcome back to another edition of Issues in Education. Mondays during the Noon Report, we spotlight the issues that matter most to our public schooling families with the good Dr. Ralph Kerr at the Teaching and Learning Institute. Ralph, welcome back to the program, sir. Great to have you with us today.
Thank you, Bob. It's great to be with you again as well.
As we come on the air today, we're marking the second anniversary of the Parkland shooting in Florida, and it's hard to believe it's been 2 years already since that shooting. There was news last week, Ralph. I don't know if you saw it or not, but when it comes to these active shooter drills, these lockdowns that schools are required by law to conduct, a couple of big teachers' unions, the National Education Association and the American Federation of Teachers, said these are doing more harm than good, that they're stressing out the kids the way that they're conducted. What do you think about this controversy?
Well, you know, it's interesting that on many things I disagree with both of these major teachers' unions. But from what I know about this situation, I tend to agree with them that it is causing a lot of stress amongst the students. I read that 35% of students between the ages of 14 and 18 have a mental health crisis each year. And certainly if this is contributing to that, then I think there are other ways to handle it.
Mm.
For one thing, I've seen some demonstrations of the technology that's now available for schools. There's software now that if someone gets into the school, a camera picks that up immediately and can track exactly where they are and automatically shuts all the doors in every classroom. And along with that, of course, if teachers and staff are well trained, I think there's enough training that can happen with the adults in this situation rather than stressing out the students.
Yeah.
The other thing is that, you know, students go through fire drills by law regularly. They know how to evacuate a school in just a matter of a minute or a minute and a half. So I think that, you know, with the increasing technology, it may be that it's time to take another look at these active shooter drills.
Let me play devil's advocate just for a minute, Ralph. But what about those who, whenever there's a shooting like this, you always hear afterwards, we never thought it could happen here, or you can't train for these sorts of things, and that's why they have active shooter drills. Apart from the real thing, how else can teachers, school administrators, students be prepared? You mentioned the technology thing, but is there anything that can substitute for a real active shooter situation?
I think there is. As I said, to evacuate the building, the students already know how to do that. So in a situation where evacuation is called for, they're well, I think it's 6 fire drills a year that schools have to do. So the evacuation piece, they certainly know well. And if, again, if the doors are all locked and the teachers and staff are trained in terms of giving specific instructions to the students about what to do in the classroom, I think that the adults on the scene can handle this without stressing out the students.
Yeah. Speaking of stressed out students, you mentioned that statistic there, 35% of students will experience some sort of mental episode at school. We've talked on this program ad nauseum about the need for more mental health workers, maybe investing a little more in that over those school resource officers. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that's true that actually schools now have become the main mental health care facility. And, you know, earlier in my career, I used to say that's not really the business that we're in. We're in the business of educating students.
Yeah.
But more and more, I think mental health care has become a responsibility of the schools. And I agree with you that we should be looking at putting more public funds into school social workers and other mental health providers that can help the students, because I honestly was shocked when I saw that 35% have a mental health crisis. And by that number, those include attempted suicides and really dramatic events that students are facing, you know, not just, you know, I'm kind of stressed today kind of thing.
Yeah, it's an epidemic out there. And if you want to learn more, I'm sure you're talking about this topic and others. Active shooter drills, do they work? Ralph, there's a great website where they can go to, folks can get information. What is that, sir?
Thank you, Bob. It's simply whyrun.org. Whyrun.org.
All right, guys, appreciate it. Issues in Education comes your way Mondays during the Noon Report. You can also find it online anytime at fln.org/podcasts.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. A disturbance coming east out of the Midwest will bring our region snow, sleet, and rain later tonight into tomorrow. It's mainly a nuisance system, but do not be surprised across the Twin Tiers region if a 2 or 3 or 4 inch snowfall occurs overnight tonight into tomorrow morning. But in the meantime, for this afternoon, we'll have clouds and mixed sunshine with high temperatures in the upper 20s to the upper 30s. Cloudy tonight, snow and sleet will arrive, then change to rain late tonight and tomorrow. And again, there could be 2, 3, 4 inches of snow accumulating over the higher elevations of the Twin Tiers. Temperatures tonight rise from the 20s into the 40s with stiff breezes. Tomorrow, we're over to rain and showers. Then chillier again on Wednesday with flurries, sunny breaks, and a bit of lake snow off Lake Ontario. High temperatures Wednesday, in the upper 20s to the middle 30s.
Okay, Kevin Williams, appreciate it. Finally at noontime on this President's Day, correspondent Bill Zimpfer shares some of the more fascinating facts about our commander-in-chiefs.
In today's era, Thomas Jefferson might have been a storm chaser. He had a fascination with weather, recording readings twice a day and tracking severe weather patterns. Some presidents had a unique employment history. Andrew Johnson worked for a tailor as a young man and made all of his own suits while president. As sheriff in Erie County, New York, one of Grover Cleveland's duties was to serve as hangman. Then there is the eerie tale of William McKinley, who always wore a carnation on his lapel as a good luck charm. On September 6, 1901, he took it off to give to a little girl. He was shot shortly thereafter and died 8 days later.
Interesting stuff. Thank you, Bill. Bill Zimpfer reporting. Other interesting tidbits this President's Day. The first president to actually be born in America, that would be Martin Van Buren, our eighth president. Benjamin Harrison, the first to have electricity in the White House. The first one to travel outside of the U.S. of A. was Teddy Roosevelt. And Jimmy Carter, the first president to be born in a hospital. That is the world we live in this Monday, President's Day. As always, thanks for joining us. I'm Bill Price, Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.